evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, says it expects Kenya's Tuesday elections to be peaceful, transparent, and credible.
Kenya is considered as a showcase for the region, and the commitment the Kenyans have for the democracy, the aspiration of the Kenyan people.
A former Zambian foreign minister says the nullification of his parliamentary seat is an attack on the country's burgeoning democracy.
This is an attack on democracy because they did not have a single ground from which they could have nullified this seat.
And a Nigerian human rights activist files a suit against the federal government over the ongoing strike by university teachers.
The right of children to go to school is their right. And if the federal government is not responsible enough to recognize that it's our right to go to school, we have the right to seek a redress in any committed court. So it's not about achieving anything.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, a regional bloc, says it expects Tuesday's elections in Kenya to be peaceful, transparent, and credible. The peaceful transfer of power after the polls, the group says, will pave the way for the consolidation of democracy in Kenya. Dr. Mulatu Teshome, former president of the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia, is the lead of the IGAD poll observer team to monitor Kenya's elections. He met the presidential candidate, the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, and other stakeholders in the run-up to the elections. Kenyans go to the polls to elect a new president, Senate, and a National Assembly on Tuesday. The presidential contest between incumbent Deputy President William Ruto and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, analysts say, will be competitive. It comes after recent polls showing Odinga ahead of Ruto before the election. For more about IGAD's expectations for the upcoming Kenya's elections, I reached Dr. Mulatu Teshome, former president of the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia.
The forthcoming Kenyan election is very crucial for the Kenyans to determine what future lies ahead of them for all electoral stakeholders. Kenya is considered as a showcase for the region, and the commitment the Kenyans have for the democracy, the aspiration of the Kenyan people for fair competition. Among candidates, is peaceful, election is conducted, and for the Horn of Africa, actually the IGAD region at large, that will come with the promise of peace and stability.
Mr. Teshome, what would be your message to these candidates? Because often, due to how competitive the elections are in Kenya, as you've said, people express concern about politically related violence during the election process.
Yeah, in my view, and the view we all of us as election observation mission heads, what we share in common is ensuring the vote unfolds peacefully. Definitely will depend on the Kenyan people and all government institutions and especially the electoral management bodies. Given the geopolitical situation of the Horn of Africa, it is important for all involved to do our best to ensure the vote passes off peacefully and avoid taking steps that might undermine the capacity of electoral institutions to deliver a free and credible election. All countries at IGAD have a common interest, and that common interest is to have the Kenyan election concluded peacefully. A credible election will serve the region, not only Kenya, but the region as peaceful, stable, and a promise for prosperity.
You have met stakeholders, including Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. How ready are they to ensure that the elections are credible, free, fair, and transparent?
What we witnessed from the discussion we had with the commission is that they are well prepared. Prepared in the sense that the past election management, the weaknesses and the strengths have been taken into consideration, and they have drawn lessons from the past election, and they are very well prepared to have a credible and peaceful election. And from the discussions and explanations we had from the commission, I'm hopeful that the Kenya election 2022 of August 9 will be concluded peacefully.
What are your expectations of the elections on Tuesday?
I think that we have one interest, and it is to see a peaceful and credible election in Kenya and a peaceful transfer of power. This will pave the way for further consolidation of democracy in Kenya, and this can serve as a benchmark or as a reference point for IGAD and IGAD countries, which is with the mandate of strengthening democracy in our region by providing a sustainable platform for monitoring and observation of electoral processes. So we, not only for Kenya, but for the region, it will be really a very good exercise. If everything goes well, then it will serve as a reference point, as a benchmark. So other countries have got a stance or a position to stand with the Kenyan people, to share the concern of the Kenyan people for the peaceful conclusion of this general election.
Dr. Mulatu Teshome is a former president of the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Still in Kenya, recent opinion polls show former Prime Minister Raila Odinga leading incumbent Deputy President William Ruto days before Tuesday's general election. Results of the latest research released by Ipsos show Odinga with 47%, followed by Ruto with 41%, while George Wajakoya, who represents the Roots Party, comes in a distant third with 2.9%. Another poll released by the Nation's media group shows Odinga with 49%, Ruto following with 41%, while Wajakoya garnered 2%. The contest between the two men is expected to be competitive, according to analysts. They say the candidate who is able to persuade undecided voters in last-ditch campaign efforts could be the East African country's next president, who will replace the outgoing president Uhuru Kenyatta. For more analysis on the latest polls, I reach Samuel Mutoka. He is director of the East and Horn of Africa branch of the Ipsos Center for Development Research and Evaluation.
At the time of the poll, no one presidential candidate at the 50 plus one threshold, which is required for somebody to win at first instance. However, the leading candidate, and that is Raila Odinga, had a 47% preference rating, while Dr. William Ruto had a preference rating of 41%. And because we still have a 9% undecided vote, we think, depending on how the campaigns happen this week, if Raila is able to convert just a half of the undecided voters, then he will win the election at the first time. I think that was a major finding of this particular election.
But Samuel, some people would wonder why there are undecided voters, looking at how competitive the contest between former Prime Minister Raila Odinga and Deputy President William Ruto is anticipated to be.
Yes, we've come from a past where our elections and our campaigns were very much regionalized, but more based on ethnic kind of divisions. And so the levels of support for candidates at that point in time were very much determinable, looking at just the, you know, the tribal card alone. But remember, we here now have the two leading contenders who have gone for their running mates from one community and in a way divided the vote in that one community, in such a situation or in such a scenario where we still have quite a number of people who are still not very sure whether they want to go this way or the other way. And then the other thing, when we look at other polls that have happened in this country, you find that in as much as people have not loved the government very much, but people have a very big liking for the president. The liking for the president as a person is still very high. And this president comes from a community that has literally gone against the grain, and majority of them have desired a candidate who is not what the president has said. So in as much as the president is not commanding a lot of support, but he still wields a level of influence, wherever he goes, the things that are happening, he's still able. So there's a scenario that has been created in the country that creates that kind of a perception that there could be a higher number of voters that are undecided.
What do Kenyans expect from the new leader, especially when they routinely complain that politicians come, they vote for them, they don't keep the promises when they get there?
Yes, we did try to ascertain that in our research. So, for example, we asked all respondents to list the three important issues that they would like the new government to address. Now, from a citizen's point of view, they would want the government to address employment. They would want the government to address corruption prevention. They would want the government to address issues around education, food security, agriculture production, and health access. And if you look at the manifestos of the leading, of actually all the presidential candidates, and especially the top two issues, employment and corruption prevention, which I think are very emotive issues, the Kenya Kwanza campaign, which belongs to the deputy president, has really talked about employment, has really talked about empowering the grassroots person, has really talked about, you know, bottom-up approach, how we make sure that the economy is distributed in such a way that the local person can also benefit from it. But when you look at the campaign platform of the former prime minister, it is everything around corruption, how we prevent corruption, how we get back what has been stolen from the country. And those two propositions resonate very well with the wishes of the people on the ground. I think what remains is seeing this happening, because they've been put in their manifestos, they put it very, very clear in the plans that they would want to do. Now it is up to the winner of this particular election to see whether they will implement this. But allow me to say this. In my adult life, and over the last 30 years or so that Kenya has been a multi-party democracy, this is probably the first election where there are some real concrete issues that are forming part of the campaign.
Samuel Muthoka is director of the Eastern Horn of Africa branch of the Ipsos Center for Development Research and Evaluation. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Joe Malanji, a former Zambian foreign minister, says the nullification of his parliamentary seat is an attack on the country's burgeoning democracy. The business executive promised to defeat any of his opponents in the upcoming parliamentary by-election. Malanji represented Kwacha constituency in central Zambia until the confirmation of nullification on Wednesday. This after the Constitutional Court upheld a High Court ruling which had nullified the seat in November, saying Malanji did not possess a grade 12 certificate, a key constitutional requirement. Malanji maintains he has the required certificate, which he says will enable him to contest for the parliamentary seat again. The nullification paves the way for a by-election within 90 days. For reaction to the Constitutional Court's decision, I reach former parliamentarian Joe Malanji.
This is an attack on democracy because they did not have a single ground from which they could have nullified this seat. You know, we went to court on the premise of going to argue malpractice and violence, because there is a provision for our constitution that actually gives you time barred provision in which one is supposed to challenge eligibility of any candidate if they find that candidate wanting. And that never happened. And we have a situation where this was brought way after the 7 days window had elapsed. So even when we went to the lower court, we never thought there was need for me to carry any of my documents relating to academic qualifications, because the window was over. And not that only, even the petitioner did not have anything on him which could have genuinely brought back the need to get back to the eligibility stage. It's now so disappointing that we can't trust our own courts.
Are you saying that you don't trust the independence of the judiciary based on this ruling? Is that what you are saying?
Yes, definitely. Because you can see, and hence it is something which has been postponed several times, and we knew from the way to go that something was cooking.
The by-election should be 90 days from now, correct?
Within 90 days from now, yes, we shall get back to the ground and reclaim the seat.
What makes you confident that you will win this again?
I went to the people and made a declaration that I was their servant, that I was reporting for duty the minute they gave me a mandate. And there's nothing that will stop me from helping my people in the community. The people of my constituency actually know my capacity to help them. It's not a question of going to pick the seats for prestige.
Some of your critics, while I was in Zambia covering the election, cited instances of vote rigging, intimidation, and voter irregularities during the polling as one of the major reasons why they think the seat was nullified by the courts today. How do you respond to such criticism?
I was exonerated from that, even by the lower court itself. I was not found wanting in any of the circumstances of the aforesaid. And I can assure you that I'm somebody who works before and not during the campaign time. During the campaign time, I just mingle with the people of the constituency. I have no time to bribe. I've got no time to be engaged in fights. I'm a gentleman. So in that direction, it's all, it's a non-starter.
How are your constituents reacting to this nullification?
Yes, of course, they are very upset. They would not be happy with this because to start with, already this 1 year delay, like you've heard from me, they kept postponing this ruling because they know better why. It was supposed to actually have come in April. It came to May. After that, June, July. They postponed it. It came to until today. Okay, so it has been postponed several times. And the unfortunate thing is, even the other seat, which was nullified the day before yesterday, you would find that early morning, before even the ruling, the people that are attached to the powers that be were already pronouncing nullification. So there you go. So just urge them to remain steadfast. We are getting back to the ground, and we have to make sure that we protect our vote. Chances of them bringing violence there are very high. Already last week, when I was doing some donation to a clinic, they sent cadres there to come and attack our people who were presenting the material there. They were injured. They even injured the patients who had come to the clinic.
Joe Malanji is a business executive, former Zambia's foreign minister, and former parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. A Nigerian human rights activist has filed a suit against the federal government over the ongoing strike by the academic staff of universities, or ASUU. Patrick Osagie Eholo, founder of the NGO and human rights group called One Love Foundation, says university students should not suffer from the strike, which began on February 14. The ASUU embarked on a strike after saying the government has failed to keep its promises since negotiations began several years ago. It says the group will continue the strike until the government meets all of its demands. They include the revitalization of public universities, increased funding for state universities, and the payment of promotion arrears and allowances. For more on the decision to seek legal redress over the ongoing strike by university teachers, I reach Patrick Osagi Eholo.
Any nation without education is a blind nation. I also know that most children that are affected by the ASUU, they are those we describe as the very poor. Because I know that the likes of Osinbajo or Ingege, who is the Minister of Education, the grandchildren of Atiku or Tinubu are not affected. So in that case, they don't really care. And the prostitution have increased. The drugs, the criminality are on surge. And that's what prompted me to go to court, because what affects the children is affecting me directly or indirectly.
What do you want to achieve with this suit against the federal government, and what do you think the prospects are?
Well, I'm not achieving anything, you know. Law is not about achieving something, it's about precedent. I'm saying the precedent that the right of children to go to school is their right. And if the federal government is not responsible enough to recognize that it's our right to go to school, we have the right to seek a redress in any committed court. So it's not about achieving anything. As you are aware that I'm a Canadian, as you are aware that my children, they all live in Canada, you know what I mean? But I cannot, simply because my children live in Canada, that I care less about the children that live in the country of my birth. And that's why I'm taking the federal government very unserious to tell them that the children have to go to school. If they don't go to school, I will not have any other option than to picket every international airport in Nigeria. Because if I make them uncomfortable by flying their children to school abroad, maybe they will have a rethink to open a university institution.
Some people are suggesting that this is just a mere publicity stunt because it will not have any impact on the ongoing negotiations between the government and ASUU to try to resolve the ongoing strike, which has been extended by 4 weeks by the academic staff. How do you respond to that?
Well, the response is that the bulk of the blame is the children. Because they are so comfortable choosing a different device or a different means. I'm not saying not them, most of them. Go to what you call Yahoo, go to the streets, hustle, and do all kinds of ill-gotten businesses. If the children are responsible, what happened in Sri Lanka can happen in Nigeria. It means that the exercise was just a joke, because we can picket the airport. We can make them ungovernable. When you have a country that has 16 million people, you have about 2,000 policemen in the street, and yet there's crime and there's unrest in those area. So if our Nigerian students mean what they are doing, and they said enough is enough, and their mother cried out, enough is enough, and we go to the airport, we go to the train station, we picket them, we block everywhere, I'm telling you, they will reopen the school the next day.
What are you calling on Nigerian students to do? Because the teachers and academic staff are
saying that even before you call from America, I'm calling Nigeria students. I'm calling those who was elected to represent Nigeria students to create a platform that we can all discuss. That if the likes of Ingege, Buhari, and the ministers are not responsible to open the school, we should make their government ungovernable. We should picket the airports. We should tell them that the DSS will not arrest us because their children are affected. The police will not arrest us because their children are affected. The soldiers will not affect us, will not arrest us because their children are affected. But we have not been bold enough to do the ordinary, to tell the government that they have failed in their responsibility, because it's enshrined in the Constitution that you must protect life and property. They have not done that. It's also in our Constitution that the children have the right to go to school. They have not done that. So it's for us to tell everybody to wake up, to lift the face, to wake up from their slumber and face this government.
What do you say to those who are saying you have jumped the gun with your lawsuit, because there's ongoing negotiations between the government and the academic staff who are on strike currently, finding ways to resolve it?
Because it has never yet any results. It has always been a romance between the government. It's like you're talking about NSC, National Labour Congress. What have they done lately to the workers? So should I just allow this world to be toying with our lives, or to make mockery of us? And that is why, because whether you want to believe or not, we are still living in Federal Republic. We're not living in a banana republic. So there's still law that guide us from the 1999 Constitution. So I'm using that law to say if the federal government refuses to yield to the negotiation of ASUU, the only option that we have is to protest against them, to picket their airport, to picket their subway if they have one, to picket their motor park if they have one, to call for a sit-down hall without going to jail. Because any country without education is a black country. Don't you get it?
Patrick Osagi Eholo is founder of the NGO and human rights group called One Love Foundation. He spoke with me from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. A civil rights group, the International Society of Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety, is calling on the Nigerian authorities to step up the fight against Islamic militant groups including Boko Haram and ISWAP. It warns that failure to resolve ongoing insecurity challenges will enable the militants to take over the capital Abuja and by extension the rest of the country. They cite as key examples the recent attacks on a presidential convoy, kidnappings, a prison break, and threats by the militants to kidnap President Muhammadu Buhari. The call comes as Nigerians express concern about a surge in violence and kidnappings carried out by militant groups and bandits in several parts of the country. It also comes as school authorities close public secondary schools in Abuja over insecurity concerns. For more on the call for immediate action, I reach Emeka Umiagbalasi. He is the leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law.
The InterSociety, as you know, is a research and investigative organization. We did our investigation. We decided to issue a stern warning to Nigerian authorities not to try to scuttle the 2023 presidential election and other elections, and most importantly, the transition of power. Because we have it from the point of view of our investigation, that what is going to happen is that the extremists in the season appear to have adopted a radical plan B, whereby what happened in Afghanistan may most likely be allowed to take place in Nigeria. And what is it that happened in Afghanistan? That the Taliban, the whose forefathers were the Mujahideen, you know, marched to the Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, and with all the security forces collapsing, reached the seat of power of the country, took over, and declared Afghanistan officially as an Islamic caliphate.
The president recently called on the security chiefs. They met and they came up with a new strategy. Nigerians, I understand, would soon see a new strategy to combat these insecurity issues in the country. What are your thoughts?
Well, the presidency has come up with more than 20 strategies, and none of them has worked. I think it boils down to sincerity. There is lack of institutional sincerity, bureaucratic sincerity in the system. Look at what happened, and all the security chiefs, SASI chiefs are still intact, and none of them has been reprimanded, none of them has been punished. So we are used to such rolling out of strategies, and at the end of the day, nothing happens.
You are not confident in what the government is saying. Is that what you are saying?
The only confidence we have in this government is for the government to stick to 2023 general election and handover. Any other scheme, any other antics, any other this thing will be rebuffed by democratic forces. And that is why in that statement, we call on all democratic forces in the country to rise in strong defense of democracy. Let this government stick to organizing free, fair, and credible election. And when the time comes, let the government hand over. Nigeria must be governed by democracy. And there is nothing short of that. There is no shortcut to democracy. We don't want a declaration of the country as an Islamic caliphate. And every effort must be made to rebuff and thwart that process. And we are saying the truth and nothing but the truth.
Emeka, some people are suggesting that InterSociety is basically becoming an alarmist, saying that Nigeria could become a caliphate if the Islamic militants are not stopped. What makes you so confident that this will happen if they are not stopped?
Of course, they did it in Afghanistan. We have an assemblage of Islamic jihadist groups in the country now. Before this administration came on board, There used to be two, Boko Haram and ISWAP. But right now we have more than nine. Of course, we have Ansalu, we have Boko Haram, we have another Boko Haram faction, we have ISWAP, we have Jihadist Fulani Herdsmen, and we have two other groups that are still at embryonic stage. The totality of 15 Islamic jihadist groups and their affiliates operating in the country, openly or clandestinely in the country. More so when Nigeria has, unofficially become the African capital of jihadism. So that is why we don't want it. So that is why it has to be resisted. And government of India is not telling us the truth.
The government officials, including Lai Mohammed, the information minister, came out recently to say that they have been working 24 hours to try to reduce the insecurity situation in the country and to reduce incidents of the public being attacked by these militants and bandits. What is your reaction to that?
If the government has been able to govern Nigeria pluralistically, this thing wouldn't have arisen. Nigeria is a multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-religious group. And the constitution says so in several provisions. But the government of the day is not governing the country the way it is supposed to be. You look at the list of that, if you look at that statement of our, you will see the list of 24 top security, defense, policing, justice positions in Nigeria. In a country of roughly 50-50 Muslim Christians, you look at it, 19 of them are held by Muslims.
Emeka Umiagbalasi is the leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from Onitsha, capital of Anambra State, Nigeria. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Amnesty International is denouncing Guinea's military junta for the arbitrary arrest of dissenters and the use of excessive force to quell large-scale demonstrations. On July 28, the police used violence to crack down on a protest in the capital arranged by a coalition of unions, political parties and civil society groups, the FNDC, or National Front for the Defense of the Constitution. They were protesting for a return to civilian rule and a ban on demonstrations. Violence broke out between the police and the stone-throwing crowd. Authorities say five people died from gunfire and several more were arrested, including two members of the FNDC and the leader of the political party, the Union of Republican Forces. Amnesty International is calling for their immediate and unconditional release and charges against them dropped. Right now it's time for music from our African collection.
I Mekwazi, shazi. Ebe mam love, mon kwazi. Chini nini mda wa wombwazi. Wonchen, nanyen. Bimpi dimpa. Medi ya minu mutumuka. Medi mamu no mutumufa. Keke ke, keke kwa. Epa, momo visa. Yinke di ista. Eden your sister, no curb in the trickster. Wala jime size, mink cappy. Incense, in attraction.
Atas. Have some fun tonight, AJ. Baby girl, your body time. Oh, your bumper so white. Been the drinks and the things we gon' need. Make we have some fun tonight, AJ. Oh, you know, oh, you're fine. Oh, bad to have you.
Make out according to my size. The moment that I know.
Number so I could call you, you know, like take you out for some dinner or some. You mean a lot to me, baby. Listen to this.
International, you go there with me for flight. like, honey, would you stay with me? I said, no, no, man, you go there with me for life. She do me magic. Girl, your body na hekele be. My head dey slow like traffic. This your body, oh, it dey high like palm, yo. Oh my lady, oh, no go do me con, yo. If na face you be Rihanna and your body na palapa, wala. I want to with you, Asa. I must confess, your body very offensive. It's not my defense. Defense, yo. I must confess, your body not my object, yo. They giving me problems, problems, yo. My darling, would you fly with me? International, you go there with me for flight. Honey, would you stay with me? I said, no, no.
Ghana, Jala, Fwee. see the Ghana your love, where I chop, fuck up my brain. What she give me for that early mama? Quarter to eight. I tell her, I know really the star, cover the plate. Me whenever they taste, but I they salivate. The thing they hot, the thing they jake. Nobody say the pepper full of too much, but in the cake. I beg, what be the kind spices? What be the mix? Now the thing waiting my mind like this, run me the tricks. She they keep my focus, the container bogus. Customer service man, they forgive and bonus. The way she come place comfortable, my coordination unstable. Now combination of X and something else. And when I go put on for mouth, the way she scream way loud. And as you hold in my chest, keep going, yes. What you they do today? It's Friday. I get another fix, if your mind be.
Music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Kwame Asante, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, there's no cure that does not have its price. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.